Our presentation this morning is by Joanne Green. It's entitled Promises and Trust. And looking forward to hearing all this. So, Joanne, please come to the mic.
Well, this is a little daunting. I was expecting, 10 people. It's a long weekend. Okay. And my eyesight's not great, so I should have printed this bigger, I think. Okay. So first, let me start today with an admission. I purposely used the title Promises and Trust because I wanted to use a word that was easily understood and felt comfortable. Promise can be used in the place of covenant or agreement or even treaty. As the newsletter description said, I hope to explore how feeling safe in a community allows us to be our real selves. But as I speak those words, real selves, I know I am still learning about my own. So perhaps I was a little optimistic when I wrote that description. The term covenant is a Latin origin, convenire, meaning a coming together. It assumes two or more parties who come together to make a contract, agreeing on promises, stipulations, privileges, and responsibilities. A bit like a marriage, but I think we don't talk much about the privileges and responsibilities when we get married. I'm not sure. Covenants in religion often convey the binding relationship between a deity and humanity. In Jewish and Christian theology, covenant is an agreement between God and God's people. In Unitarian Universalism today, it's an agreement about how we will strive to be in relationship with one another. Covenant was quite important to most Unitarian congregations in New England, and we're talking 1700s, which began life as Puritan churches, or maybe 1800s. They had written covenants which were between individuals and the congregation, generally signed by men. The covenants usually couldn't be signed by women or black people, because they didn't have legal status to sign. So Daniel Harper, a Unitarian Universalist writer in the U.S., wrote a piece called Deconstructing Covenant. And according to Harper, written covenants had fallen out of use by the early 1930s. Many Unitarians did not accept the need for written covenants. But then Unitarian scholars started talking about them again in the years leading up to the merger of Unitarians and Universalists. So Harper contended that those early covenants were bound up with patriarchy, colonialism, and slavery, and he didn't accept that they were something to be resurrected. Today's covenants of healthy relations seem to be a much better version of a covenant. I don't remember talking about covenant very much in Calgary, where I grew up, or Regina when we arrived, and I suspect that was true in many other UU congregations. I hadn't really considered what the concept meant until about 10 years ago when I visited Saskatoon Unitarians and saw a poster about their covenant of right relations. It was out in the hallway and quite large and big print. And I asked a few questions and sort of filed it away in my memory bank and didn't think about it much. But then, a couple of years later, I was involved in a conflict with a member of the fellowship that didn't have a good ending. The board decided to arrange for a workshop with Joan Carolyn, our CUC staff rep, and we had a day-long Covenant of Right Relations workshop. The decision to offer the workshop grew out of the board's recognition that it would be helpful if there were guidelines for communications. The workshop helped me understand how communication agreements could facilitate the everyday work of groups and how they support problem solving when the need arises. At the workshop, we learned about covenants of right relations that existed in other congregations and how to develop one to suit our needs. There was a team created with two drafts to work from, and Pam and Andrew and I actually worked on that first one quite a few years ago now, and it was presented at an annual meeting and a year later formally adopted. Since that time, at that time the covenant had some fairly specific do's and don'ts, such as moving to a dispute resolution process if it wasn't possible to sort out a conflict. Since that time, the covenant has been revised to highlight four values with ways to live into them. And Michael, if you could share the slide, I'd appreciate that. Thank you. So it was written in two parts. And the first section explains why we have a covenant, to create the world we aspire to live in, to contribute to an inclusive community, and to help support one another. The second section on the next page I was expecting a different view, even though I'm the one that did that. Okay, the second section focuses on four values, as you can see: respect, trust, empathy, and diversity. Interestingly, in the U.S., the Unitarian Universalist Association, or UUA, is moving toward a similar way of expressing the important values held in the principles. Not similar in appearance, but similar in thought. And I know the second version, I know Jane was involved, but I'm sorry, I don't know who else was involved in the writing. If you're here, you could wave your hands. Jim Hutchings. Anyway, I meant to look it up and didn't. Thanks, Michael. I think we can take that down now. So, speaking of the UUA, Reverend Susan Frederick Gray, who was a former president of the UUA, wrote sometime recently, "We sometimes wrongly say it is the absence of creed that is the most important to who we are as Unitarian Universalists." She says, "This is wrong. Any one of us could practice religious freedom at home on Sunday morning. We could practice religious freedom all day long every day and never come into community. It is covenant that brings us out of isolation, covenant that brings us out of selfish concerns, out of individualism, to join ourselves to something greater, to become part of a community that is working to practice love, dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and wisdom together, to find better ways to live our lives and live in the world." When our original covenant was created, I don't think I understood its wider purpose, to provide a framework for relationships. Since that time, I've participated in other workshops to expand my understanding and did a lot of reading to put this together. I learned that an important part of it is naming the values that are important, how we communicate, how we create a welcoming environment. I think it's important to see it in writing and have it on the wall, which in this building, I know for sure it's in one place downstairs on a bulletin board, partially framed in deep green. We all want to feel safe, to believe that when we are in relationship with one another, we will not cause harm or be harmed. And I know I can think of, I'm not sure which word to use, a few times, many times, when I have caused harm. And it's not a comfortable feeling. Covenants can also be developed for specific gatherings or meetings, too. For example, each time Canadian UU youth or young adults gather for an annual conference, they start by creating a covenant. They get in themselves into a circle, and they write down all the things that they believe are important for their weekend, which I think is a really cool idea. Another example of a specific agreement for safety was presented to us by Donovan Hayden, a black UU from Ontario who spoke to us on December 12, 2021. His talk took place shortly after the member congregations of the CUC approved the new eighth principle. In the preceding months, there had been many email exchanges across the country that were very negative. When Donovan agreed to speak, he said he would be asking us to abide by an agreement for how we would be together. He and his family had experienced overt racism in Canadian UU congregations, and he wanted to prevent further harm to himself and others. The agreement was important for our whole time together, but especially for the Q&A session we did after the service. The program committee wholeheartedly agreed that we would accept his guidelines. We wanted to be in a good relationship for that short period of time and respected his need to be free from racist comments or actions. We didn't think that any of those would occur, but he wanted to be sure of being explicit. We shared the agreement before starting the Q&A session. Donovan's request was something I thought about frequently after his talk. The first item on his list was to accept that racism occurs in UU congregations. I heard that this particular statement has been difficult for many across the country. I heard these things as a board member for the CUC. It felt very wrong to me, though, that he didn't feel safe enough to speak without that agreement. I was certainly ready to abide by the request and honor his truth. The agreement he requested was in response to his reality. The agreement had been used and written and used by him many times before speaking out to us. The fellowship in Regina was not singled out in any way. Sorry, I'm just laughing at something that happened at the front here. Our own covenant was a response to a difficult situation. Here, it was a necessary companion to our principles. I think this is where we get to the trust. We build trust when we act in a way that values respect, empathy, and diversity. Trust is necessary for healthy relationships wherever we are. So why is a covenant necessary when the principles are in place? Not sure I have an answer, but we'll see. I think in the past, individual actions and opinions were often valued over the group, so our fellowship, other congregations, and so on. There was a culture of individualism, I think. I can think of times in our own community when individuals made statements that were dismissive and disrespectful of other beliefs. There were and still are folks in other UU congregations that think the eighth principle infringes on their personal right to express beliefs, even when those beliefs or opinions could be harmful. But I don't agree. I think there have to be limits on what we say and do. And Ann Barker said something similar when she was here. I think that when our statements or actions cause harm to others, they are no longer acceptable. So many of our relationships are based on unwritten rules we learn in our homes, our schools, our faith groups, and so on. Society functions when we agree to follow the rules we all know. There is a level of trust that we'll stop at the stop signs, pay our bills on time, and so on. But what if I don't know or understand all of the rules understood by others, especially those unwritten rules, the cultural rules. I think the written covenant helps me to act in a way that will hopefully create a place where others can trust me to understand some of the limits I need to respect. The covenant also helps me to understand, when Reverend Ann Barker was here a few weeks ago, she and Jamie Struthers shared what I will call a conversational reading about listening. And this is an excerpt, just a few sentences. I want to hear what you dream about, what you hope for. I want to know how you arrived at this resting place on your journey. What if I speak and you don't understand me? I will listen and listen again until my hearing becomes understanding. How can I trust you to hold my life stories? By knowing that as I receive part of your story, I will give you part of mine. How will this work? Let us begin to listen and trust and know one another more deeply. And now that's Wayne's cue, to join us. Join me up front. We're going to do this next part together. It's a reading called A Covenant Invites Relationship by Reverend Lisa Ward. She's a UU minister in Maryland, USA. A covenant is not a definition of a relationship. It is the framework for our relating. A covenant leads room for change and chance. It is humble toward evolution, period. It claims, I will abide with you in this common endeavor, be present as best I can in our becoming. This calls for a level of trust, courage, and sacrifice that needs to be nurtured, renewed, and affirmed on a regular basis.
A creed creates a static truth, something that does not incorporate new insights and realities.
A covenant is a dance of co-creation, keeping it in step with one another in the flow of our lives.
A creed seeks uniformity and a unison voice.
A covenant seeks harmony and a shared voice. Sometimes we may arrive at a unison, but it is not required.
A creed gives authority to the statement.
A covenant gives authority to shared intention.
A creed creates an us and them.
A covenant invites relationship.
A creed is a prescription that must be relied on.
A covenant relies on the treasures of shared truth.
The overall trust within this covenant is the truth, that's with a capital T, something which no one person can fully see, yet something which each and every person can come to know in glimpses, in another's stories, in epiphanies. Truth is ever-changing in our seeking to understand because of our limited perspectives. We grow into a deeper sense of the meaning of all things when we take our journeys seriously with full heart and mind.
The courage within a covenant is in the acceptance and celebration of life, with all of its challenges, pain, ironies, and joys. And the sacrifice within a covenant is in the letting go of dogma, of assumptions, of control, and giving over to a greater wisdom which comes to us in bits and pieces. The task of a covenant is to take responsibility for the freedom we espouse. We know that we are interconnected and that what we do creates ripples of hope, or despair, of affirmation or negation, what we do with and for one another is powerful and beyond our imagining. Thank you for listening this morning.
Thank you very much, Joanne. That was very well done and interesting, and good feedback too from the members.